Okay, this week is Parshas Vayeshev, and you're going to have to forgive me, but we're going to skip the entire ordeal of Yosef and his brothers. We knocked that barrel so much that you know everybody has their own opinion, and I didn't even look at it in the Aksava Kabbalah. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the three other major components of the Parsha. The first one is the Yehuda and Tamar story. The second one is Yosef with the wife of Potiphar. And the last one is Yosef in prison and interpreting the dreams of the Sarham. Actually, more than the Sarhofim. The Aksav HaKabbalah doesn't really look at his interpretation of the baker's dream. He just looks at the interpretation of the Sarah Mashkim, because that's the key. That's the key for everything. And so we'll look at those three areas, and hopefully we'll come up with some new things, a la the style which we've been grown accustomed to. Okay, so just as far as where we are in the Chumash, it's page 208, and that is chapter 38. Okay, now the only information I'm going to give you, just with regard to Yosef and his brothers, is that Yehuda was a key figure in the conversation. He's the only one, well, I should say, Reuben and Yehuda are identified by name in terms of their role in the in sending Yosef into the pit and ultimately selling him. Shimon and Levi are also attributed to being involved in there, but they're not mentioned by name. So Yehuda is the one who says, "Ma betzakina arogus achinu v'chisinu estamo." What do we gain out of killing our brother and covering up for his blood? What do we gain? What's the profit? There's no profit. So he says, "Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim." So what happens there is, like I said before, it's a very long interpretive kind of conversation and discussion, which we're not going to get into. But it's immediately after that that the Torah tells us, Vayhi ba'isahi, page 208, Perek Lamed Ches, Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi ba'isahi, Vayered Yehuda me'isachav, that it was around that time that Yehuda went down from his brothers, Vayet ad ishadulami ushmo chira, he met this fella, Chira, Vayar Shem Yehuda bas ish k'nani ushmo shua, Vayichev ha'evoila, he met the daughter of a Canaanite and he married her. Interesting language that the Torah uses, "Vayikachecha vayavohela," which is reflective that he took her and he came to her. That is reflective of an idea which we saw several weeks ago when it came to first of all Yitzchak's marriage to Rivka, and also the way that the Ksav HaKabbalah looked at the marriage of Abraham and Sarah, essentially telling us that they were married according to the rules of Noahide law. And Noahide law, which is what the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Ishus, I believe, is that in those days, if you wanted to get married, all you had to do was basically start living together. You start living together, and you declare that you're in monogamy with this individual, and there you go, you're married. That's all that was required. So, he took her, and he came to her. That's the biblical clean language of referring to the marital act. And sure enough, she has a couple of children with him. Er, Onan, and later on, Shelah. Okay, so the first thing that we want to look at is the Aksav HaKabbalah, and it's coming down by Esahi. So as man shenimkar Yosef l'Mitzrayim, b'sivas asas Yehuda, she'amar l'machro, v'lo amar l'hashivo. So it's at the same time that Yosef was sold because of Yehuda's advice, atzas Yehuda, Yehuda's idea. He is said to sell him and not to return him to his father. V'shikelas aviv, and he basically ruined his father's life. Chal al Yehuda prima alalav. So what came upon Yehuda was the fruits of his own mishaps, right? The things which he did wrong. V'holid shnei b'nei mavas v'nishar shakul m'shnehem. Okay, and he became the father of two children whose destiny was to die. And it was Yehuda's destiny to be bereft of them. And it's interesting how later on that experience which Yehuda has may come back to teach him a very valuable lesson when it comes to the defense of Binyamin on two levels. On the one hand, convincing Yaakov that he is the guy who's going to take care of him. You compare what Yehuda says to what Reuben said. Reuben said, "Eshnei banai tamis in lavi, my two sons can die." And Yehuda says, I've been there, buddy. You don't want to be there. Okay, and Yaakov knows this, that, you know, Reuven can say whatever he wants, but the only person who appreciates what I'm going through, with Yosef being missing and the potential Binyamin being missing, is Yehuda. And when Yehuda offers to take care of Binyamin, so he basically redeems himself from this. And then, of course, when he confronts Yosef, that's a furtherance of his redemption from whatever he had done here. Okay, so essentially, what is he saying? That there's a mida keneged mida. That Yehuda, actually, if you take a look at the previous pasuk immediately to this, not the previous pasuk, there's a couple. I'm sorry, I should have read this properly, but we didn't do it. When the Torah says what happened to Yosef, it says, let's see. No, it says Vayaviu es Yosef Mitzrayma. But what happens to Yaakov is he says, Ki ered el bni avel Sheola. I'm going to go down to my son. Sheol is, you know, it's a language used to describe some kind of a purgatory. So that's the one thing. And then if you look at the very beginning of the next chapter, Paraglamatas, the Yosef Hu Rad Mitzrayma. So you get the idea that there's a comparison between what's happening to Yehuda here by Yered Yehuda versus what happened to Yaakov, saying Ki Ered El Bni, that I will go down to my brother, to my son Yosef. And of course, what happens to Yosef, that he is brought down to Egypt. So it's a different kind of Yerida, it's a different kind of going down, but that is the story. Now, the focus of the Ksava Kabbalah's interpretation when it comes to looking at the story is trying to understand the relationship between Yehuda and Tamar vis-a-vis whatever happened with Er and Onan. As the Torah tells us the story, tells us that Er was Rabbe in Hashem. It's Pasuk Zayin. That Yehuda had he found Tamar to be the wedding to be the marriage partner for Er, and Er dies because he's bad, and then Onan takes Tamar as a wife. Why? Because Yehuda says to him, "You're going to take him as a wife via beimosa, and you're going to do the concept of yibum, a levirate marriage via kemzera la'achicha, and you're going to have children on behalf of your brother." In other words, the children that will be born are going to be, they're going to be called Ben Er, not Ben Onan. And so Onan goes ahead and he does what he does, and he too dies. And so Yehuda says to Tamar, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Tamar, why don't you sit as a widow in your father's house until Shayla grows up? Because Yehuda thought maybe Shayla would die the same way that his brothers died. But Tamar, so Tamar did that. She followed his instruction. But when the time passed, now Yehuda is single because his wife died. So he finds comfort. He goes to the sheep shearers. Vayugad l'Tamar l'Emor, the next page, 210. Excuse me. Tamar is told that he's coming up, and she takes off her widow clothing, as it says towards the end of Pasuk Gedalit, Ki ro'asah ki gadal she'la v'hilo nitanelo l'isha. She saw that she'la had grown up, and she had not been given to him as a husband. Okay, and so she goes ahead, and she basically pretends to be some wayward woman on the street corner. Yehuda sees her. He offers himself to her. They have a sexual liaison, and then she disappears. He leaves her with some of his items that belong to him, saying, "I'll pay you with gedi izim, with some goats," which is kind of ironic because they used goats to cover up the sale of Yosef, and also. But it's not strange for him to do that. I mean, Shimshon also purchases whatever what he pays for his wife is gedi izim, is goat. So in other words, it's not bizarre for him to offer that. But anyway, she takes his items and disappears. So now here's the question. Okay, let's go back for a second. Pasuk Hey. So after giving birth to Er and Onan, Yehuda's wife gave birth to Shelah. And it was in Chziv.
What is Kziv?
So the article translates Kziv to mean the name of a place. Okay? What does the word Kziv come from?
False.
Kozov. Bingo. Take a look at the Ksav HaKabal. Vaya b'Kziv. Okay? Kasav, Rabbi Avadya Sforno Kasav, Karato Shela, Lashon Atishle, Shehu Shem Biltina Os. He called him Shela, because it's a word which means something which is not so nice. Rabbi Shehuda, Aya Az Bechziv, V'tolchalta Nechzava Mir Os Pnei Isha, Be'ez Lirita. That Yehuda was in Kziv. What does Kziv mean? We're going to see in a second. And there's tochalta nichzva miraos pnei isha beis milata. So there's something which prevents a falsehood from seeing. Now pnei isha, the way that it's written here, could mean her man. Sometimes isha, very rarely is isha written with a yud, meaning woman.
Yeah.
It usually means her man. So that she couldn't see her. So presumably couldn't see her husband at the time that she gave birth. Vehu imayasham, and he, if he was there, Loya maskim b'kriyas shem biltina os, he would not have agreed to call her this. Okay, so in other words, this idea of saying that Kziv is the name of a place, that means he wasn't present at the time of the birth. Ve'ein zenira, he says that doesn't make any sense. Ki shem onen gam gen lo nov lo michaba, because onen is also a stupid name. Okay, and he didn't protest against that. That the word Shela and Kziv, they are indicative of a mistake, of mistakes which have taken place here. And the translation, the Aramaic translation of the word Shigaga, which means a mistake, something done accidentally, is Shalusa, which is the same word as Shela. Like Rabbi Kasavsky said, Kazav means something which is false. So what's the difference? He says that, he's going to explain, that the idea of making a mistake is when a person is mistaken in their mind, they think they're saying something which is true. What's the difference between sheker? Sheker who should be ezdi meroyo debi atzmo sheinu emes. A sheker, a real lie, excuse me, is that when you say it, you know you're lying.
Yeah.
Okay? The chazav, and what's chazav? Who should be ezdi mero, yidamesh, ikaye di mero. Sometimes a person says, yeah, I'm going to take care of that, I'm going to do it. And they really intend to. But turns out that they don't get to it. That's chazav. And something happens which gets in the way. But in the beginning, they were, you know, the person was mistaken. They just didn't realize. In other words, the setup for the Yehuda Tamar story is the idea of the birth of Shela. In other words, Shela. Everything should have ended after Onan died. Okay, in other words, Yehuda should have said, hey, listen, Er died under your, you know, in the marriage to you. Onan died in the marriage to you. Goodbye. Okay, enough's enough. But he didn't do that. Yeah.
You could support him maybe because of the beliefs on the Himafini baby. You don't wait till the third baby.
Well, there's a better concept. Marek Kasavsky, the concept of the Isha Katlanis, right? The woman who has a reputation that husbands die.
So how many does it take to
three?
Ah, so that's an interesting question.
Is it
three or is it two?
Two.
Okay, so he says no, it's actually two. So he misled her by saying I'm going to wait until Shela dies, and in the interim, what did he do? He said, forget it.
Okay.
Until he grows up. Did I say dies? No, until he grows up. Okay? And he misled her because he really didn't have any intention to do it. Okay, so that's the setup. So now, one of the questions that we have to ask when we try to look at this story is, how old were Aaron and Onan?
Three.
Okay, in other words, it says, Vahiba Esahi, Vayerid Yehuda Me'esacham. Now, the one thing that we do know for sure is how old Yosef was when he was sold down to Egypt. Yosef was 17. How many years older than Yosef is Yehuda? Not more than 3. Which means that, just do the math. It's in the 7 years that Yaakov is married to both Leah and Rachel that all of his sons except for Binyamin are born. And it's right after Yosef is born that he says to Lavan, I want to go. So that means that Yosef is born at the end of those 7 years, and Yehuda is the 4th child, separate pregnancies, of Leah. So assume a year, right, for each one, even if you want to say that you know, maybe our children were born a little early, if you want to make that argument, there's a little bit of break between, you know, so just assume a year. So Yehuda is born at the end of the 4th year, and Yosef is born at the end of the 7th year. So they're 3 years apart. Okay? So if Yosef is 17 at the time that he gets sold down to Egypt, and Yehuda is therefore 20, how much time passes from when, you know, by he, by Esahi, it's at that time that Yehuda gets married. So he has to, his children have to grow up somewhat, right, before they can get married. How much time passes? Anybody? It's a good question, right? Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, if Shelah is a little younger, so even if Aaron and Onan, let's say they're like, you know, Reuben and Shimon, boom, boom, one right after the other, but again, separate pregnancies, because it says she became pregnant again. So there's separate pregnancies. And so even so, you have to have some kind of passage of time. And then by the time Shelah, let's just say there's a little bit of a break between the birth of Onan and the birth of Shelah, by the time that Shelah grows up. So, you know, in this little segment, there's a lot of time passing. Like, this is all the time that Yosef is in Egypt, right? Yosef is in Egypt for 22 years before there's a reunion with the family. When does all this stuff pass? That's the question. Yeah.
Is there also a problem about the fact that you don't get the death penalty until you're at least 20 years old? So Aaron, Onan.
Okay, so you're asking a very good and an important theological question about how it comes to pass that Aaron and Onan die. I can't answer that question. I don't know the answer. Okay, it's God's business. I mean, I just don't know the answer. Okay. All right.
Why is it that Judah apparently disobeyed his ancestry, and took a wife from the Canaan?
It's a good question. That was a preference that Avraham had for Yitzchak. It may have been a preference that Rivka had as well because of what she saw with Esav, who married 2 women from the Chiti family, and that was very distressful to her. I don't know if it was a law. The Midrash, when it describes the wives of Yaakov's children, it says they married Canaanites. They all did.
Well, some Russians say they married twins.
Right, twins. Okay, agreed. Yes, yeah. You know, that's one view. Right. Okay.
But why not even the daughters of Yishmael?
I don't know.
But
Yishma, you know, at least it was it's a kasha. I don't have an answer. Okay, so let's take a look here. I want to get to the part. All right, we'll look at what I gave you in Kiyamar, okay? Antiqua Dalshala. So we'll finish up page 1. I had to do a lot of skipping because he does a lot where he goes out of the. What he does really in Ki Amar is he gives you what every single other commentary says, and then after that he gives his own interpretation. Okay, so let's read through the stuff which I gave you. Okay, so you have to understand that the view that he's going to espouse with regard to the ages of Aaron Onan is that they were actually children, okay, under bar mitzvah, and not just like 12 and a half, you know what I mean? Way before that. Now this is something which the Gemara goes into also when it talks about Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur, and I don't understand this Gemara because it's not our life that you have somebody who's 8 or 9 or 10, getting married in any capacity.
Why? Right, at that age.
Right, exactly. But that's the view that he's coming from, and I it is what it is. But what's fascinating though is that let's say for a second they were Ketanim, Okay? Now, I mean, just as an aside, I don't watch a whole lot of television, but I do have one weakness. When I'm on JetBlue, I watch Law and Order. Okay, so Law and Order and NCIS. So now, Mutalach, thank you. So I remember one episode that it's usually Law and Order SVU, which is the Sexual Victims Unit. And there was one episode where some lady had been, I don't remember if she was dead or if she had been raped, and she was just like out of it when this happened. I think she had been drugged, so she didn't know who her rapist was. And they were saying that in whatever semen, they didn't find, in other words, there was liquid, but it didn't have semen inside. And they came to the conclusion as a result that the rapist was a child, prepubescent, okay? Which, you know, I never actually thought about these things, but that was just an interesting idea. So what does that mean about Aaron Onan, if in fact they are that age? Again, interesting questions. I don't know. But anyway, let's take a look here. Ki amar, klamar, docha, ya osab, akesh, loya, bedatul, asiyalo, ki amar, pen yamus, muhzek, asizoshi, yamus, anasha. Okay, this, he quotes Rashi. I knocked off the yud, but that the idea was that Yehuda was just pushing her off, saying, "I really have no intention to marry you off to Tamar." So he should have been honest with her. But that's the idea of Sheila and Kazit. Mikol makom, le'inyan sakanta de katlanis lo azlina basar ruba. When it comes to the concern or the danger of a katlanis is a woman whose husband's died. We don't follow the rov. The chamira sakanta meisura, because the danger is more important than an Isser. He says there wasn't a mitzvah of Yivam here. He had two issues going on here. The prohibition of marrying your brother's wife, and the concern over a woman who causes her husband to die. So Yehuda made the decision that she needed to wait until Sheila was even older. In other words, however old, whatever age Aaron Onan had been, that couldn't work for Sheila, because he's considered to be halachically a saris. In other words, somebody who can't procreate yet. Aaron Onan, part of their problem was they weren't old enough. And then be a mitzvah sibu, and then he can have yibum. So there's no danger. Kishon mitzvah lo yeda davar ra. Okay, part of the concern was that there's no fulfillment of a mitzvah of Yibum here, because they're not old enough to father a child. So Sheila, Yehuda wasn't saying no. Yehuda was saying that Sheila needs to be considerably older. He says this opinion, which I just quoted, has just turned over Rashi completely. Right, so somebody who's actually doing Yibum is protected in that he's doing a mitzvah. He says, but it only works when he is old enough to do Yibum. Amnan Khan, however, here, Shabala Harishan Hayakatan, since her first husband, that sounds silly, but her first husband was a minor. Gam yibum onan shaya katan lo kana ba kinyan. There was no, whatever Onan did was also a katan, so there was no kinyan. There's no yibum here. Umiyata gam kasher yidal sheila ein kan mitzvah yibum adin emar bo shomer mitzvah. He has to shomer mitzvah lo yena davara. He has to be somebody who's at a stage of his life where he can actually be fulfilling a mitzvah, and there's no mitzvah here. You can't compare mitzvahs that they were fulfilling before Matan Torah, mitzvahs she'achar nisnasah. You can't compare it with mitzvahs that come afterwards. Hacharonos, hey, mitzvahs chiyuvos. The ones which come later are obligatory mitzvahs. And mitzvahs which anybody's fulfilling before the giving of the Torah, they just come from a person's volunteerism. You don't have to do it. They were not commanded to do these mitzvahs pre-Matan Torah. And therefore they had permission at times to withdraw from fulfilling them. And that's why Yaakov was allowed to marry two sisters, which is against the Torah, and Amram was allowed to marry his aunt, which is against the Torah. So there's nothing to ask about, is this human proper, is this not human proper, whatever's going on with Tamar, because it's not meant to follow whatever's going on, whatever the Torah says. Te'ida, she'en yivun zed ki'yivun de'la'acha matan Torah. Shaharei, I'm not sure what Aleph Kuf here is, v'lo yosef od da'ata, shaharei, I guess Amar Kro, v'lo yosef od da'ata, because the Torah says regarding Yehuda that he has relations with her, and then that's it. Shapirish l'arvoseinu kevin she'ada shuv lo pasak m'mena. That the rabbi said in Sota that once he knew her, then, I mean, you know, I'm not sure, shuv lo pasak m'mena means you don't stop her anymore. I think, I thought it was only a one-time deal. Because the Ramban says, ishto k'mishpat ayivamim. And the Ramban says that she becomes his wife like the way it is with Yibum. So I'm not actually well-versed in the laws of Yibum. So, because I've heard different things. One is based on what happens with Yehuda, that it's a one-time deal and you don't have to take her. But if the Yibum and the wife, if they actually want to stay together, I believe they're allowed to. Right? They are allowed to. Sometimes they don't allow. They don't want to. So if they don't want to, then you do Chalitza. So Chalitza means no marital relation. And then there's the third option, which is one-time deal to try to lock in Zera, and end of story. All right, anyway, the point is, skip to the part where it says Ki Kamo. Is that in this one? Ki Kamo. Where is it?
Ki Kamo Shayim.
Where is that? Yeah, 5 lines to the bottom. Ki Kamo Shayim Mishunim told Osam Laholid Ben Shimon Akacha Hayim Mishunim Me'on Sham. He says, just as they were different in the fact that they were 8 years old, they can also be different in the fact that they could be punished. So maybe, Jerry, that's your answer. That's the answer to your question.
If they're 8 years old, were they able to make children?
That I don't know.
So then, because they were punished for wasting their seed.
Right. So at least Onan was. It says regarding Er that he was Rabbi in Hashem. What's fascinating, though, is the next, that he was Rabbi in Hashem. He was bad in the eyes of God. But we don't know if he was doing the same thing. What's fascinating, though, is the next one. Okay?
Yeah.
The next one, Ki Gadal Sheila. Lefikach Ifkir Atzma LeYehuda. That when she saw that Sheila had grown up, and that she had and that she had not been given to him, or you know, vice versa, she made herself available to Yehuda. She wanted to give birth to children. That's what Rashi says. The fact that didn't bother her at all, that he was her father-in-law. I'm now in the bold, the bottom page one. They never had the normal kind of marital relations. And remember we said about
Enochai,
right, yeah, but even so, whatever it is that they did, they never consummated the marriage. That's the point. Okay? And so he says that if there's no consummation of the marriage, remember the Noachai laws of marriage. You have to have a consummation of a marriage. You don't need a kubba v'kiddushin. You need a consummation. And if that takes place, fine. If not, then she never really was married. There would be a son that's chai v'misa. The Ben Noach Shabbal Ishtar Shalokadarka Chayav Misa. What is Bia Shalokadarka? There are many different definitions of Bia Shalokadarka, but it means a non-normal sexual act. And according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, if that's what a Noachide gets involved in, then they're Chayav Misa. So you can say whatever you want about spilling a seed or whatever, we don't know. But the point is that because of this is, he says, that's the reason why they died. And that also explains why, even though Yehuda was her father-in-law, guess what? He wasn't really her father-in-law. Because if they would never had a consummation of the marriage,
there's no marriage.
So why did they judge her so severely if it wasn't really a marriage?
Excellent question. Turn the page, okay? Look at Chaf Dalet. Okay? So, look at what he says for Chaf Dalet. That was the judgment, right? Remember when they find out that Tamar is pregnant? Hotziyu v'tisareif. You know what the Ksava Kabbalah says? He says, no, it doesn't mean like burn at the stake. It's like Hester Prynne. It's like Hester Prynne.
Yeah.
Okay, look what he says. Lodana sayud l'sreifas gufa, ela sheyisrifu l'arosh l'apone l'siman shizona. Right? They should brand her. Brand her, whatever that is. That's about Turim, the name of Yehuda Chassid. And he says that's the way they do B'nai Yishmael, that's what they do. This is Arab custom out of Yom HaZeh that he's talking about. I don't know if they still do that. I think they stone them now in some places. I don't know. But anyway, but that's the point which he makes. Now, in the previous one, which I didn't read with you, and we're not going to read it because we just don't have time, but he says that in Peni and Lavuz, he talks about the definition of the lav of Kadesha. What does it mean to be the prohibition? And he says that it wasn't really the case here. Yehuda was not thinking about Znus. Yehuda was thinking about that, because the Kadesha only becomes forbidden after the Torah was given. I told you before. What is allowed? Noachad rules. You meet a lady and you decide, hey, let's go into some private place, and there you go. It's an act of kedushin. Okay, and that's why Yehuda was looking for her afterwards. He wanted to, you know, to finalize. Didn't happen. And so what Yehuda says in the end is that Sad Kamimeni. This is the last thing which we look at over here. Sad Kamimeni. So take a look, Chavav. Masha Asasa, he ayabadas v'yir Shemai. She was thinking it for the sake of heaven. Lolatava gufanis, she wasn't looking for physical pleasure. Didn't came lemalachachare bakarim. Because if she were looking for physical pleasure, why didn't she follow young men? What did she need? An old and altakaka like me? Why would she attach herself to somebody so much older than her? When she saw it, she had not been given the Shela. So he's kind of putting himself, putting thoughts into Tamar's mind. He, you know, the Zechava Kabbalah might say, look, she was never really married to Aaron Onan because they never consummated a marriage. But in her mind, this is the father of her husband, Hameis, who Lukayim Zerim Menu, in order to get to seed for me, the Kavanah Sala Shem Shemayim Basa. So she was doing this thing in heaven. I'm not Masha Asisi, I knew you from Derech Taiba Maguna, and I was looking for a physical pleasure. And he says that these other commentaries, they added next line at the end of the line, which is bold. Avabi Shet Sadaki Mimasa Zu, Kevin Shinazdamna Li Yishti, Avalhi Tsadka Yoter Shinazkavan Lashem Shemayim. He said, I may have done something right, because I was trying to make her into my wife. That's why I gave her what I gave her, and that's why we went into a private room, yada, yada, yada. But she was tzadka yoter. She was actually righteous in this act. And that's why he says, tzadka mimeni. I wasn't so righteous, maybe a little righteous, not so righteous. She was much more righteous. Okay, so that's his interpretation of the story. I particularly like the idea that they weren't going to be putting Tamar to death, because that is the way that I always saw it up until now.
Really,
and he
painted it. Two young children were killed. The punishment really is on you, and he wasn't exactly father of the year. I mean, in other words, listen.
You know something.
You know something.
I it's hard to know because the truth is that we have the same issue with last week's parsha with Shechem and Dina. We don't know how old Shechem and Dina were. It seems that Dina was also around this age. I mean, that's just the pshat. Because if how old were Levi and Shimon? How old was Shimon and Levi?
13.
Right? 13. So how old is Dina? She was also born around the same time. She's the same age as Yosef. Okay? So if they're 13, how old is Dina? She's 8. Well, then how old is Shechem? You know, that's some sick... I mean, in our minds, because we live in the culture we live in now. Okay?
But
we have no idea. But the idea that Shechem might be that same age too just shows us that there was a different... It was just a different society and culture. And as a result, what does that mean? So maybe Yehuda is looking, and he sees his boys that they're pulling Shechem at least thoughts. So he says, "Let me at least make it legitimate. I'll bring a woman into their life in a normal way. A woman. How old is Tamar? I have no idea.
By choosing Tamar, theoretically, based upon Shem's daughter, wouldn't you think that she would be even older than Yehuda?
I mean, that's a bold assumption. We're told who Tamar is. Oh, we're not told who Tamar is. I take it back. Okay, yeah, well, all right. Yeah, I mean, I hear it. I reject it. I don't accept it. Okay, sorry. Okay. All right. All right.
But we have a question about why she was considered like the daughter of the cult. Okay, yeah. If she's Shem's daughter, you have at least something.
I don't know how old Shem is, and that It sounds to me like it's a nice thought, but it's too fanciful for me, because shame is, you know, I don't even know when he dies. I'd have to check the thing. But shame is, even if he's still alive, no, I don't think he's alive at this point in time. Maybe he was alive in Avram's time. I don't even know. I don't remember. But it's too fanciful for me. I can't. I just.
Where do you get the order of coming?
I don't know. I mean, the Torah only says that he took a lady for Er Bechoro with Shema Tamar. And her name is Tamar. That's it. That's all we know about her.
I mean, later, when you're talking about punishing her, don't they say something?
No. They burn instead of...
It just says, Ho-tzia v'tisarev. Okay, I want to move on. Okay. The next story which we have is the story of Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. Okay, now I would say that probably the most important thing to base anything on is a basic understanding of Potiphar. Okay, Potiphar, I'm saying what I want to say. Okay, who was Potiphar? So there are actually different interpretations about who Potiphar was. Not who Potiphar was, I should say what Potiphar was. One view is that Potiphar, he was described as being a Siris Paro. Now, Siris could mean an officer, but Siris is more often translated as, anybody know? A eunuch. Okay, which means that his wife is a wife for show purposes, because he can't please her. Okay, that's number one. Another possibility is that, and this is, I'm not making this up, is that Potiphar was a homosexual, and that's another reason why he couldn't please his wife, who again was for show purposes, and that one of the things that attracted him to Yosef was
Yosef's beauty.
His attraction to Yosef. Okay, so now, that's, again, that all that is conjecture. We don't know, but that's what some of the that's what Chazal go. Some of the directions in which they go. At the same time, we also have to bear in mind that Potiphar's respect for Yosef was such that when this whole story comes out, unlike what it says in the musical, letting out a mighty roar, Potiphar burst through that, Joseph, I'll see you locked in jail. It seems very clear that Potiphar did not believe his wife. And that he did believe Yosef, and he trusted Yosef implicitly, and that he just had to put Yosef in jail because
keep him away from
you. Because that's what you do. Keep the wife away from you. Right, okay, because that's just what you do. Okay, anyway. So let's just take a look at a few things. I don't have time to read the Pesukim inside, but we're told that Yosef becomes a pretty impressive figure in Potiphar's household, and that he's a handsome man, etc. And then in Shishi, page 214, Pasuk Zion, we're told that it's after all this, in other words, after Yosef achieves success in his master's household, so the master's wife, Mrs. Potiphar, she raises her eyes to Yosef and she says to him, Shechva imi, lie with me. Vayimain, note the trup. Vayimain, which has a shalshelis, which is a big deal. Vayimain, psik. Vayomer, elishas adonav. So vayimain means that he refused. And one of the points that Ksava Kabbalah gets from the trup in particular is what he says on vayimain, parpasuches, which is that he refused. End of story. Sometimes people who want to like give in, like, you know, I can't, it's not right, you're the master's wife, da 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 da. Yosef, vayimain, not happening, lady, not happening. But as we know, she keeps coming. So finally he says to her, all right, listen, you know, you're the master's wife, it's not happening. Okay, but the point is that first and foremost, he says, not happening, refuses, it's not happening, not happening, not happening. And then he gives an explanation later. Vatisa ina el Yosef. So the Ksav HaKabbalah's approach to this is that why did she look at Yosef? Because Yosef essentially became like a master in the household. So she looked up to him. She said, "Oh, this is not just is he a handsome guy, but he's an impressive person. He's very successful in everything that he does." And as we know, success breeds attraction, right? Even if people are not so handsome or lovely, but the fact that they're successful is attractive. It happens to be that Yosef was also handsome. So that's the Ksav HaKabbalah's view, that she was attracted to his success. What did she ask for? Pasuk Yud. So she said Shechvayimi, we saw that. Pasuk Yud. Vayhi kedabra el Yosef yom v'lo shemayla, as she spoke to Yosef every day, and he didn't listen to her. He didn't listen to her in what manner? Lishkavetz love lihiyosima, to lay next to her and to be with her. Take a look at Ksava Kabbalah. Pasuk Yud. Lo matzanu etzla ala mishgal. Okay, so in other words, to lay next to her is not referring to a sexual act. Rak ima o osa. Okay, in other words, shechva imi, that's what she was asking for. Shechav osa, when somebody lay with her in the word osa, that refers to a sexual act. Ve'inyan etzla kanu ki agiveres. So Yosef refused to even lishkavetzla. Hagiveres yashva kaminaga gviros al meitza sheish. Umeshi al aretz, that she would lay on some kind of mattress or some kind of settee on the ground. V'asarim, and officers, kiavola daberi mahen, when they would come to speak to her, yishkavu al osana mitzaos umishami dabru imahen. In other words, it looks a little intimate, but it's not really intimate. When you lay down next to somebody, it's like if I'm sitting, and nowadays, if I'm sitting at a table, somebody wants to talk to me, they come down, they sit right next to me at the table. Now, we might sit across, but in this kind of circumstance, it would be laying down. She was saying, Yosef, come lay down, man. I want to talk to you. And he didn't even want to get that close because he was afraid of what would happen next. I'm not sure, that might be Rabbi Yosef Albo. I'm not sure who he's quoting. Anyway, that's the first one. So now, this is his longest interpretation. I had to cut it down to size. And so, what's fascinating here is how he reinterprets the word hazeh. How would we translate the word hazeh? Right? Kayom hazeh. It was on this day. What day? A day. So he actually gives interpretation from every other commentary. That maybe it was a day when the Nile was overflowing, people went to look at it. Maybe it was a theater day. Maybe it was some religious day. Maybe it was some, you know, something was going on. So it was a special day where it was assumed that there was going to be nobody in the house. Okay, we're just in the interest of time, we're just going to skip from bold part to bold part. But I gave you all of this so that you can see. Nir lamar shelo pirshu Rabbi Seinu milas hazel likinui aromaz ki ein lo makom kan. He says that our rabbis did not interpret it the way that you think because it doesn't really fit here. Right? It should say by he ke, you know, some yom, it was some day. What do you mean this day? Avo pirshu lashon gavhos v'romamus ki lashon arami. Misherabu zehuhe alev. He says that the word zed doesn't mean this. It refers to something big or something great. And if you look further down, about let's skip 5 lines. Inei tarvayu riveran pirshu milas azeh al hagavhus v'aromamus. Something great. Something big is going on here. Another interpretation is l'chein yiparshu shubamakom milas asher, that hazeh is being used in the place of the word asher, that. So, let's get to the very end. Lefizet, based on all the interpretation which he's given up until now, chaser milas asher, gam lashon asa, hey lishna katiahi, hachi yom ze levad asa Hashem, below, I'm sorry, asa Hashem, ze hayom asa Hashem. The whole thing, he gives a bunch of examples of how the word zeh refers to some kind of greatness. And so therefore he's saying, ki ayom hazeh, this was a day of greatness. That something big was going on. It's not that, it's just, it was some this day. So some of the examples which he gives, and I don't think I cut them all out, but I didn't highlight them in the way that I would have liked to. Ki zeh kol ha'adam. Kamo zeh sinai. Har tzion zeh shechantabo. Har zeh kansa yimino. Zeh hayom asa Hashem. Okay, that all these words zeh refers to something which is big and great. And so basically what he's saying is, there was something big going on, and that's how you get it. Mm-hmm. It's not, in other words, the word zeh actually refers to something which is big and great. Now, once we get that understanding, we understand how Yosef can come to the conclusion that there's nobody in the house. But in the next paragraph, Lasos Malafto, he essentially asks the question, how could Yosef put himself in this situation, knowing that nobody was there, that maybe Yichud would come about. And so essentially he says that Yosef had really, and actually that's one of the reasons why one of the interpretations of Chazal is that Yosef was intending to actually succumb to her pressures. But nonetheless, this is the reason why Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik, because Yosef, and this is not really the direction which he goes, but the point is that what's the word?
Seduces him.
I'm looking for not supposition, whatever. She put him in a situation in which she was looking for different things, and the idea of lishkavetzla and lihiyosima may translate in the end to the same thing. But the point is that she was trying to do things in stages, right? Lishkavetzla Yosef. That was the point that we saw before. When Yosef is invited, come, just lay down next to me. What's the big deal? What's the big deal? You're wearing clothes, I'm wearing clothes, I'm not trying to do anything. But Yosef didn't even want to put himself into that situation. And it's just an important lesson. And this is the reason why Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik, because how many people, when they have, and he's a single guy, unattached, right, servant, and you can only imagine that she's wanting this for her own pleasure, and she's not going to talk about it, right, presumably. And then you have a willing woman, and she wants, and Yosef says, no, I'm out of here. And he gives up everything. He gives up everything in order to not do it. And the last point that I wanted to just draw to your attention is Kadvorim Ha'ela. Okay, did I give it to you? Your test? Take a look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rashi says, Tash B'Sham Elokein, that she was telling Potiphar that he did these things in the time when she and her husband were united in the marital act. He says, Ein HaKavon HaTashmish Mamish Shari Saris Hoya. He says, there's no way that it was actual Tashmish Hamita, because Potiphar was a Saris. He was a eunuch. Potiphar could pleasure her in other ways. He can hug her, he can kiss her, okay? But he couldn't do anything that she was accusing Yosef of. So therefore, the Ksav HaKabbalah claims that that's not what, that just simply was not what was going on. Okay, so we get a little bit of a disturbing view into the life of Egyptians, or certainly Potiphar. Okay. Why does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that. Well,
so he was one of those.
Okay. But I think that what it ends up doing is it just proves more and more. So one of the great lines that the Ksav HaKabbalah has, which I didn't give you. I wish I'd given it to you. I didn't give it to you. No, he has a great line where, based on what she tells him, here's the line.
I mean, it gives us some insight as to why she was so forward and so desiring of him. That I can see relevance. Okay.
Well, I mean, the line that he has, I wish I could find it. I don't have it right here. But he says that based on what she told him, he knew the truth of how much she was lying. Okay? So, what does that do? What does it do? So I think that there are a few things. I don't want to put a number. But there are a few things to be taken from this story. Okay, number one is Yosef, how he finds himself in a situation where I mean, take Lot as an example. You know, Lot. I mean, I don't know that he meant to, but Lot gave in. Yehuda. That's really the main comparison. Yehuda finds himself in a situation where there's a willing woman, and he really shouldn't, but he does. And how Yosef, where he's so far from home and nobody's ever going to know about it, right? We don't know anything about Potiphar's wife, but he doesn't give in. So that's on the one hand. But on the other hand, it's important that this story happens, and in the way that it happens, so that Yosef ends up being in the jail of whom? Where is he?
Well, he's in Pharaoh's.
It's a political fact.
He's in a political prison. And whose political prison? Take a look at the very next chapter. Pasuk Gimel. So the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Ofim, Vayitena Sam Nishmar, Beis Sarah Tabachim, Beis HaSoar. They're placed into the prison, which is in the basement of, I don't know, basement, but in the house of the Sarah Tabachim, the house of the butcher, the office of the butchers. Who's the officer of the butchers? Potiphar. That's what we're told when he buys Yosef. Mekom Asher Yosef Asur Sham. The place where Yosef is in prison. Why is he there? Because of all places, he needs to be in prison so he can get an introduction to Paro's people, but specifically in a political prison where the Sarat HaBachim, which is it's the prisoners of the king. So Yosef needs to go there. How on earth would he get into this political prison? Only if something happens specifically and the Sarat HaBachim says, you know what, I want Yosef in my prison because whatever the reason. I don't believe my wife. I do trust Yosef. I think Yosef's a decent guy. He was just in the wrong place, wrong time, etc. But this is all the setup for Yosef to be able to get to where he needs to go. How does Yosef? Why does Yosef need to get to the place where he's going to go? Well, that's the story that we all know. Okay, that's the whole story. Okay, all right. So we're left with the last section, which is the dreams of the Sar Hamashkim and the Sar Haufim. Okay, now, the most important thing to understand is really the Sar HaMashkim, because that's what he looks at. Okay, so let's take a look at the Pesukim, actually. All right, just a quick reminder of the story, is that the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim is the chief wine pourer and the chief baker. They get thrown into prison because they do something that upsets Paro. They have a dream, and Yosef sees that they're upset in the morning. They each have their own dream in the same night. And Yosef tells them that with God's help I can perhaps interpret your dreams for you. And so pasuk tes vayisaper sar hamashkim es chalom ol Yosef. The sar hamashkim tells his dream over to Yosef, and he tells him, "B'chalomi v'hinei gevel levanai. In my dream there was a vine in front of me. Uvagefen shalosha sarigim, and in the vine there were 3 tendrils." And the grapes are growing. Paro's cup is in my hand. And I took the grapes and I squeezed them into Paro's cup. And I put the cup onto Paro's hand. So Yosef gives him an interpretation. He says to him, Shloshes hasarigim, shloshes yamim heim. What did the guy say? They were shloshes hasarigim. And Yosef says, Shloshes. Okay, so that's one thing which he notes. And then what does he say? The 3 sarigim are 3 days. In 3 days, Paro is going to raise you up, and he's going to put you back on your job. And you're going to give Paro his cup like you did before. Okay? Then Yosef makes a request. Just remember me, when you have a chance, do some kindness to me. Remember me to Paro, get me out of this house, because I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. Okay? So that's the story. Okay, in the very last line of the parsha, by the way, that's the last thing which I gave you in this whole packet, where he talks about how. Well, he talks about how when you have Zechira and Shikcha, he says that a person has to make for themselves a simon, as an os, in order to remember. And if they don't do that, then they're going to forget. Like Zechor, Isa, Shir, Selcha, Amalek, Lotishkach. Remember, you have to do something to help yourself remember, and then you won't forget. Well, the Sar Mashkim did not give himself a sign to remember, and that's why he forgot. That's why the Pasuk says, Velo Zechar, Sar Mashkim, okay, anyway, I just wanted to get that out there. So now the question is, look at what Yosef says, and look at the dream of the Sar Mashkim. Did Yosef interpret every aspect of the dream? Yosef says, in 3 days, you're going to get your job back. You're going to put the cup. They're going to put the cup on Paro's hand, just like you did before. What other part of the dream was in there? What does the wine pourer do? Does he make the wine? He might taste the wine, but his job is to
pour
the wine. Okay. So in the dream, what is the guy doing? He's taking these 3 tendrils. Okay, and he's squeezing them in order to get the grapes to make the wine. Okay, and Yosef doesn't touch that at all. Doesn't touch that at all. And the question is, why? Why doesn't Yosef touch that at all? Okay. So let's take a quick look at the Shloshes Yamim. Did I give it to you? Oh, ha, ha, ha. I didn't even give it to you. I didn't give you the shlosh necessary gift. Okay, so forget it. All right, I'm not going to do that one. Okay, so the first part is ba'od shlosh yamim. I'm not going to get too bogged down in this one. But ba'od shlosh yamim, he tough aleph the yud beis ayin. That's Targum Unklos and Yonatan ben Uziel. He quote. I've noticed that the Ksav HaKabbalah loves Yonatan ben Uziel. I mean, he uses them all the time. Okay, but anyway, he says that they translated to mean besof plus a yomen at the end of 3 days. And one of the experts of Hebrew language has difficulty with this. Kimilas od hamachubar babeis more besoch hemshech hazman. Says ba'od shlosh yamim doesn't mean at the end of 3 days. It means sometime during the next 3 days. Okay, l'chein. And then, so I skipped a little bit. But he says l'chein ne'amar acharav ayi bayom shlishi. So therefore, it says on the third day. But if it was at the end of 3 days, then what should it say? That it was after 3 days. So the Ksav HaKabbalah says, no, that's not really a good argument. The use of the beis in ba'od is a little different. And he gives examples. That sometimes beis refers to the beginning, sometimes it refers to the middle, sometimes it refers to the end. And so therefore, whatever Yosef is saying here, ba'od shlosh yamim, means in 3 days, sometime on the third day. Okay, so that's just one little grammatical thing which I wanted to draw to your attention. But now we get to Kiyim Zechartani Yitzcha. Okay, and this is where he explains why Yosef only interprets the part of the dream that has to do with the Sinas Hakos, giving the cup to Paro. Okay, if you skip to about 5 lines down. Okay, 6 lines. And so what Yosef is saying is that there's a partner here in the interpretation of your dream. The 3 sarigim, which Yosef says equals 3 days, and the placing of the cup on Paro's hand, those are the only things which relate to you. Because in 3 days you're going to go back to giving the cup to Paro. But regarding the grapevines that were in front of you, it's like something which flowers and blossoms. And they're grapes. And I'm going to take them and I'm going to squeeze them. These things have nothing to do with you. And that's why I didn't include them in the interpretation. Skip to the next line, skip the parentheses. Aval eila heima romzim elai. But they relate to me. Skip to the bold. Hagefen romez ala Yosef. Sheanochim Yisrael nikrim gefen. Right, the gefen refers to Yosef. Because Yosef is from Yisrael. And Yisrael is referred to as gefen. V'gefen za'a yolafanav b'chalamo. Yip kiparachas. And the gefen is in front of him in his dream. And it's like something which blossoms. Shemimakom shiflas madregas Yosef tifrachas lachaso. Because from the place of Yosef's humbleness, humility, the way that he has been downtrodden and lowered, that's where his hatzlacha is going to come from. V'hayoshev ka'ez b'beis ha'mishmar. Right now he's in this prison. Misibas hishtad lusecha totzienu m'beis ha'asurim. Actually, we should probably not skip the parentheses. He's in the beis ha'mishmar. Hukayayin ha'mishumar b'socha navim. That's actually interesting. He's in the Beis HaMishmar, the place which is guarded. It's interesting because Yosef is sometimes referred to as being in the Beis HaSohar, and yet he's also in this Mishmar. So what does that mean? It's like Yain, which is Mishumar, Mitzoch HaNavim. It's like wine, which is, what's the word? What's the word you're using, Richard?
Watched.
Okay, preserved amongst the grapes. Bisibas Hishtadlusecha Totzienim Beis HaAsurim, that from your Hishtadlus, from your efforts, you're going to be taken out of prison. V'uschitas HaNavim Lohotzia Mashke Mitoch HaChutza. It's like the idea of squeezing out the juice from the grapes to get out of the grapes. That's what Yosef is referring is all about. Milas ki im tamo kimo ki im yele by your kind. You know that Mesa Davor. That when Yosef says ki im, That's referring to something which is going to happen. Kim zechartani. In other words, it should be true that you should remember me to Paro. Kimilas omnam. It should be like a or achein. Varlich. What's varlich? What? In truth? Okay. Dakavanah kim zechartani itcha. Omnam be'emes. In other words, you should remember in truth to remember me. Kemoshe b'diburi chalom shediburei chalomcha. Zecharta diburi manogim bach. Just as like in your dream. You said things which related to you. You also said things related to me. Then when things go well for you, you should please also do chesed for me. That when you are in a position where things are going well for you, you'll have the opportunity to do chesed for me. And what is that chesed? He gives them the details of what that chesed is going to be. There's going to come a time when you're going to remember me to Paro, and you're going to get me out of this prison. They're not a bakasha. It's not a request. It's actually an interpretation of the parts of the dream which don't relate to the Sar Mashkin, they relate to Yosef. Kiyim lepoter, it's to the interpreter. L'chein lo amar l'ashem bakasha v'asa k'mo v'asei chesed. And so he didn't say a request, he said, you will do kindness for me. Asei imi v'izkartani v'otzisani sh'loshan anahug v'sei for dvarim, that you're going to do things which are nice for me. And so he says, even the word na here is not a request. It's not please. Na means, as it does in many other places, na means now. That's the interpretation which he gives here. And so essentially what Yosef is doing here is he's using the full interpretation of the dream to set the stage for what's going to happen. And so that's exactly what ends up happening. In other words, when the Sar HaMashkim ultimately does remember Yosef, so you know we say V'lo zachar Sar HaMashkim es Yosef ha'ish kacheyu, that he forgot him. So some say it's a punishment to Yosef. Some say no. It's not so much a punishment to Yosef. The situation had to be right. Can you imagine if the Sar HaMashkim had gone over to Paro and said to him, hey, there's a guy in prison.
Okay,
so what? There had to come a point where the dream would be something that Paro needed interpretation for, and then what happens as soon as this happens? Then he remembers. And one of the interpretations of Eschato Ayani Maskirayom, when he says to Paro, I remember my... or I'm recalling my sin. What's the sin? The sin is that I didn't remember Yosef up until now. And the other one is that I let you linger so long in suffering over this because I should have remembered Yosef. Okay, in other words, that there are two things that he's recalling when he mentions that to Paro. Okay, and so what we see here is the Aksav HaKabal showing us that in Yosef's interpretation to the Sar HaMashkim, he only interprets for him the parts which he needs to hear. And that's why when he, by the way, and this is fascinating, Ksav HaKabal doesn't really address the dream of the Sar HaMashkim, the Sar Ofim rather. But take a look at this. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay? The guy is explaining how I had three baskets on my head. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Uvasal ha'elyon mikol ma'achal paro ma'aseh ofeva ofuchel osam nasal me'al roshi. Okay, he says that the birds are eating from the thing on top of my head, and what happens? What's the rest of the dream? So I don't remember if it was the Kli Yakar, but I saw last year one of the commentaries says Vayan Yosef Vayomer. Yosef interrupts him. Says, I don't want to hear the rest of your dream. Okay, that Vayan, as opposed to what he said to the other guy, which was Vayomer. That Vayomer means that Yosef waited for him to finish, and then Yosef said to him, "This is the interpretation." When it came to the Sar Ofim, because remember with the Sar Mashkim, he was doing something, right? He saw the stuff, he saw the grapes, and then he squeezed them. Yosef got what he needed to hear from the Sar Mashkim, so he doesn't get to the point where the Sar Ofim is saying what he did. He doesn't do that. He just says that the birds are eating. Yosef's like, okay, I got it. You're a dead man. I don't want to hear the rest of your dream. So it's just interesting because maybe there was something there that would have been for Yosef, but he heard what he had to hear from the Sar HaMashkim, and so he left it off at that. Just a new perspective on what's going on here between Yosef and these Sarim, which I thought was worth sharing. Okay, Yishkaich, everybody, and thank you for bearing with my voice.
Don't forget your keys.